So I too would like to say a very, very warm welcome to all our friends who have come here today, braving a little bit of rain. At least it's not cold. I do remember one year, actually also last year, when we did our Govardhan retreat. Last year we were at a place called Surabikund, about 20 minutes away from the Pandal, where we have the classes. And we were meant to go there and meet and have some kirtan outside. And all of a sudden, it started to rain. And at first it rained very gently, giving everybody time to decide whether they were going to stay there or they were going to make their way to the pandal. And at first, because it was so gentle, people were thinking, maybe we should stay here. And then they realized that they better hurry very quickly back to the pandal. And the rain poured down for about 20 minutes. It was pouring underneath the tent, and all the mattresses on the ladies' side were becoming soaked like sponges. And the rain was beating on the roof, and so much inconvenient. At least that was the first impression, how much inconvenient. But then, after that, we began to see that it was something very blessed that was taking place. So today we're speaking in a similar way about something that's very dramatic, very unfortunate, you could say, and yet something very blessed at the same time. Last year I was teaching Bhagavad Gita, and I wanted to create a slide presentation. And so I went on to Google, and I was looking for pictures of Krishna and Arjuna on the chariot, and I came across a picture of a tree. It was a sort of rundown looking, rambling looking large tree, and there was a little sign underneath, a little crooked, and it said, "This tree was the tree under which Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita." And at first I just looked at it and I put it aside, and then I noticed that it had made some kind of an impression upon me. Oh, Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita under a tree? I thought that he spoke out in the middle of a battlefield where there was just soldiers and chariots on this side and soldiers and chariots on that side, and he moved his chariot to the middle of the two sides and he started speaking. And then I started to think about this, and I decided that I would like to visit Kurukshetra and see that tree and see the place where Krishna spoke. And simultaneously, as Krishna sometimes does, my husband had the same idea. And so when I contacted him and said, "I would like to go to Kurukshetra," he said, "I would like to go to Kurukshetra." And so we went. And when I got there, the first thing that struck me was that there was a huge sarovara, or a man-made, man-extended lake, 1 kilometer long and 0.5 kilometer wide, known as Brahma Sarovara. And that is a place where the ritualistic bath takes place on certain occasions, in which those who bathe in that water will be freed from all their sins. But that wasn't where Bhagavad Gita was spoken. So on the second day, we went to the place under the great banyan tree where Krishna spoke this wonderful Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna. And as fate would have it, the day we arrived, it was Gita Jayanti, or the actual anniversary of the occasion that the Bhagavad Gita was spoken. It was the same day, many thousands of years later, that Krishna spoke. So we had the opportunity ourselves to speak, to share Bhagavad Gita under the shade of that sacred tree. And as I was there in Kurukshetra, I also heard some other things. We met one devotee who was from a resident of Kurukshetra, and he told us, "You know, 100 kilometers that way and 100 kilometers that way was the Bhagavad Gita battlefield." And my mind started to shiver. 200 kilometers of fighting? Now, if I go 200 kilometers from here, where do I end up? Bunbury. All the way from here to Bunbury, fighting was taking place. And then I saw the museum there, which has a circular presentation of each day of the battle. And again, the Bhagavad Gita, or the setting of the Bhagavad Gita, became more real. So as I was seeing this, I began to realize that Bhagavad Gita was much more than simply good philosophy. It's that, but set within the Mahabharata, it's a much more powerful experience still. So this became the basis for our presentation today. Again, my husband was very much attracted to speaking on the prayers of Queen Kunti, and I immediately started to read Mahabharata to get some further information of the setting under which this Bhagavad Gita was spoken. So together, hopefully, we can share with you some of the jewels that have transpired from that investigation. So let me hand over now.
Sri Chaitanya Mahavishnu, Sapitam Yadavitaya, Sayam Rupakaram, Sudati Sarkhanakam. Vansha Kalka Tuvasya, Pitasam Yadavitaya, Sapitam Yadavitaya, Sapitam. Very dear to Srila Prabhupada, and he even sang them in the Sanskrit. He did that very, very rarely, but he did that for the prayers of Queen Kunti. And in addition, Prabhupada had said that I put everything in the first canto of the Bhagavatam because I did not know whether or not I would complete the entire Bhagavatam. And as we do know, Prabhupada was not able to complete the entirety of the Bhagavatam. He got up to the end of the 10th canto, chapter 13. So he said, I put everything in the first canto of the Bhagavatam. And he also said, I don't know if you're aware of this, that I wasn't sure I was even going to complete the first canto. So I put everything in the first volume. And he said, and I wasn't sure I was going to complete the first volume, so I put everything in my purports, commentaries on the first three verses. So the prayers of Queen Kunti are in the 8th chapter of the first canto. And it comes directly after we see Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for the first time. That occurs in the 7th chapter of the first canto. And very interestingly, how Krishna, or you can say Srila Vyasadeva, or you can say Krishna, how Krishna chooses to introduce himself to the readers or the hearers of the Bhagavatam is that he's driving the chariot of his devotee. So very, very special that Krishna wants to introduce himself in this way. We usually try to, when we introduce ourselves, we do it in a way that we will show the best part of ourselves. And they even teach people, salesmen, when you introduce yourself, how to shake hands with someone, where to look. You have to give a very firm handshake, but not too hard, but just very firm, because this is the first impression. So Krishna wants us to have a first impression of him as the servant of his devotees. He's driving the chariot of Arjuna again. And then as that sequence goes on from the 7th chapter, it goes right into the 8th chapter. Are you going to speak about the son of Dronacharya?
No.
No, okay. So Dronacharya had a son whose name was Ashwatthama. And he actually, in his next incarnation, in the next Kali Yuga, he becomes Vyasadev. He takes on the position of Veda Vyas. This Vyasadev now is Krishna Dwapayana Vyas, but in the next Kali Yuga, when it is time to reorganize the Vedic literatures, it is Ashwatthama who had committed the most heinous of crimes. He had killed the 5 sleeping sons of Draupadi, killed them. And then he was going to, he wasn't satisfied with that. He was so angry. And remember, he becomes Vyasadeva. He becomes so angry that he tries to kill all the Pandavas with the Brahmastra. And not only that, within the womb of Uttara, who is the wife of Abhimanyu, who's died in the battlefield, the last of the Kurus. And in the womb is Maharaj Prickett, and he sends the Brahmastra to kill Maharaj Prickett as well. So he was, it was such an extreme example of hatred and anger and cruelty, very pointed, not accidental. But out of that very difficult circumstance become some very wonderful prayers that Kunti Devi has spoken. And there are quite a few prayers. It's one of the largest set of prayers in the Bhagavatam. I think there's 27 different verses that she speaks to Krishna. So we won't speak too much about it now because we did get a little bit of a late start, but we'll begin speaking again after the break, after Mataji begins speaking. But these prayers are very, very, very special because they teach us many things. We'll only be able to hear the first 10, but they themselves are a wonderful unit. They will speak, these first 10 verses will teach us how anyone, everyone, can actually achieve the supreme goal of life by following the path that Kunti Devi has explained in these first 10 verses, in these first 10 of her prayers. Very, very heart-touching prayers. And to understand what she's talking about, one has to hear these pastimes of Mahabharata, to understand the difficulties that she went through, and to understand the mood that she's going to speak to Krishna in, after having undergone so many difficulties. And now she is being confronted, will be confronted with the greatest of all difficulties, and that is, she's leaving the presence of Krishna. Now, of all the difficulties that we confront in life, that difficulty is one that we don't have problems with, generally, leaving the presence of Krishna. But we'll be speaking about that topic and other topics. And of course, that particular point is not going to, if we don't mind leaving the presence of Krishna, it's not going to bring us to the lotus feet of Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan. So if we want to go back to Godhead, back to Krishna, to engage in our eternal relationship with Him that has nothing to do with our body, we're going to have to overcome our aversion, actual aversion to our natural relationship with Krishna. So Kunti Devi is going to give us some advice on how to do that. And of course, when confronted with such a strong, powerful, and pure example, it should be quite confronting when we look at our own consciousness. And how to deal with that, we shall also speak of.
There.
So, I've been instructed to leave.
No, I was only joking.
Okay. Maybe I should sit off to the side, though.